a talk entitled Aphorisms, Juggling and Immortality of Language, given by James Geary at the 2008 Sun Valley Writers Conference.
It's my great pleasure to introduce someone we consider a national treasure here at the Writers Conference, Mark Saltzman, who will introduce James Geary for us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, you, as you can imagine, the months, something like this is incredibly complicated to put on. And so in the months leading up to it, you can imagine the flurry of emails and calls of who will do what, will you be there, can you do this, do that. About 5 or 6 months ago, I got an email from Riva Tulli saying, would you like to introduce James Geary? So I went right out and I read this book, The World in a Phrase, A Brief History of the Aphorism. I loved this book. And I wrote, I missed one part of it. In her email, she said, would you like to introduce James Geary? He's written a wonderful book about aphorisms, and he jiggles. So I read the book, loved it, and I wrote back, I said, I would love to introduce him, and I would love to know what part of him it is that jiggles. Now, I think rather than recite his many accomplishments, he's an abundantly gifted man. I would like to just tell you three of many reasons why I love this book so much. I think everyone should read this book. And I put them on, I probably don't even need my paper. The first is that I also am a person who I love aphorisms. I love sayings. I love these condensed ideas. I've always felt that these sayings are a little bit like what writers are trying to do for the humanities, what Einstein did for physics when he wrote E equals mc squared, to come up with something so concise that everyone feels they understand it right away. Well, the problem with most collections of them, though, is it's simply a collection of them, and you can't resist. The first 10 you read, you get this burst of feeling with each one, that burst of clarity. You're just, but then you just, it's like eating pie. You just can't stop. You just keep reading more and more until the effect wears off. And at the end, you're just, it's like the portable curmudgeon. Wonderful things in there, but every time I read it, by the end, I'm just, I'm not even feeling anything anymore. The first thing that I want to mention that James does in this book that is so brilliant is, as he presents the aphorisms, he gives you a brief biography of the people that wrote them. He gives you just enough space between each aphorism. Even if it only takes you 15 seconds to read this biography, first of all, you get a context of who it is who wrote it, why would a person like this do this, what kind of person are they, but it gives you just enough time so that you reboot, so the next one that comes out hits you with that same, it's a wonderful, he does a great service to this art form. And the other thing I want to mention is that the very last chapter of the book, I'm not sure if you call it a chapter, but the very last section of the book is titled, Make Your Own Bible. And he confides in it that writing this book, in a sense, was his own project of making his own Bible. And I just think anybody who dares to make his own Bible and confide that he jiggles is someone I want to know. So would you please welcome James Geary.
Thank you for that lovely introduction, Mark. I will be jiggling, so if there are any people under the age of 18, I think they should leave the room now. I will be talking about aphorisms, those short, witty, philosophical sayings that we know as aphorisms. But first, I have a few public service announcements. I regret to inform you that today's talk does involve gentle audience participation. Now, for those of you who do not wish to participate in the gentle audience participation, please just recoil in horror as I approach your chair. The second point that I want to make is that there will be exactly no time at the end of this talk for questions. And that is because I insist if you have questions, you ask them during the talk. Just raise your hand. Or not even a question, if you have a statement, if the spirit moves you and you want to share an aphorism, raise your hand. Someone with a microphone, I hope, will approach you. Now, if you don't wish to do that, just recoil in horror as the person with a microphone approaches you. The third point that I would like to make before we begin is that I promise that it will become clear by the end of this talk why I am holding a globe. Aphorisms. I first discovered them at the tender young age of 8 in, of all places, the pages of Reader's Digest. Now, I'm sure almost everybody in this... The little things at the bottom. There's also the little things at the bottom. Are you a jiggler too, or a... No, sorry. I was thinking of something else. Sorry, now, please don't distract me. Those little things at the bottom are probably aphorisms, but what I'm referring to specifically in Reader's Digest is the page called Quotable Quotes. Now, my parents were very loyal subscribers to Reader's Digest when I was a boy, and one fateful day at the tender young age of 8, I discovered a dog-eared, slightly damp copy of Reader's Digest in the bathroom on the floor where it was usually kept. And on that fateful day, I happened to open the magazine to the Quotable Quotes page. And there, I first encountered aphorisms. Now, if you go to a dentist's office, you can still find, I guarantee you'll find Reader's Digest there, and you will find the page called Quotable Quotes. It still exists, and these days you'll find a lot of Oprah Winfrey in there, and, you know, probably George Bush, too, Jr. And I was recently at the dentist, unfortunately, and I came across an aphorism by Dr. Phil, who I'm sure you all know is a television counselor. And his aphorism was, if you marry for money, you will earn every penny. I think that's pretty clever for a television counselor. Now, okay, I was 8 years old, so I didn't know the difference between an aphorism and an aphrodisiac, speaking of jiggling. But when I read that first aphorism in the Quotable Quotes section of Reader's Digest, it literally knocked my socks off. I was 8 years old, so I was not an accomplished reader, but I was an avid reader even at that age, and I had never encountered language that was so marvelous, so magnificent, so powerful, and managed to do so much in so few words. And from that moment on, I was absolutely hooked. Now, at about the age of 12 or 13, I began collecting aphorisms. Now, if you collect aphorisms, there's really only two. We have a question in the front row.
What was the aphorism?
The first one I read? Can you wait 5 minutes and I'll tell you? Maybe 10 minutes. So I started collecting them. Now, there's two methods to collect aphorisms. The first is you have to have a really, really good memory, which I do not. The second method is to create what's called a commonplace book, which is where people have, for centuries, have scribbled down passages from texts that they found particularly meaningful. So I went the commonplace book method, but I didn't use a book. I used the backs of posters of my favorite rock and roll stars. So I was 12 or 13, so, you know, I had Pink Floyd, David Bowie, George Harrison, the poster from All Things Must Pass, where he's got hair down to his hips and a big floppy hat on. So what I did was I peeled the posters off the wall and turned them face towards the wall, and I began scribbling the aphorisms on the back. Now, these aphorisms, and needless to say, I've been doing it ever since, these aphorisms, because they meant so much to me, they stuck with me. And I still have those posters, and they still hang in my study. It's almost 35 years since I compiled them. And my first entries on those posters are in red ink, which is practically illegible now. It's faded so much. But there are phrases that I wrote on those posters when I was 12 or 13 or 14 years old that I still carry with me in my head. And I'd just like to share a few of them with you now. Jean Cocteau, the French poet, mirrors would do well to reflect a little longer before sending back images. At about the age of 16, I took up the violin and I played it intensely and incredibly badly for about 5 years. At that time, I was reading Samuel Butler, and he has a great aphorism. Life is like playing a violin solo in public and learning the instrument as one goes along. I was a big fan of Gerard Manley Hopkins, and he has a wonderful aphorism. The effect of masterpieces is to make me admire and do otherwise. Cyril Connolly came a little bit later, the ever optimistic and ever cheerful Cyril Connolly. He's got one of the greatest definitions of life that I've ever come across. Life is a maze in which we take the wrong turning before we have learnt to walk. So you can see why I love aphorisms. Now, when you become attuned to aphorisms, and this was certainly the case for me, you start seeing them everywhere. And aphorisms are special because they are, well, they're special for a lot of reasons, among which it's aphorisms, the oldest written art form on the planet. The oldest written text we have are Sumerian clay tablets written in cuneiform, and they are mostly transactions of grain sales. So Joe Smith sold 80 bales of grain to John Smith. So that's not what we would consider literature. But the oldest forms of actual written literature are also come from ancient Egypt, and they are aphorisms. They are the advice of regional rulers passing on moral lessons to their sons. So the equivalent today would be, well, they all have the same title, too. It's the wisdom of so-and-so. So it's the wisdom of Ta Hotep, or the wisdom of John Smith. So the modern equivalent, I guess, would be the wisdom of Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he would have written that to his son to impart some of life's lessons. So aphorisms are the most ancient written art form that we have, but they are also the most, in my opinion, the most mundane in the sense that they are still an active form of literary transaction that takes place between people, real live people, every day. And hopefully, when you leave this room, you'll be tuned into aphorisms and you'll start spotting these aphoristic transactions that happen absolutely everywhere. For example, not long ago, I was riding on a train out of London and a teenager was walking down the aisle towards me. He had long, scraggly black hair and his face was riveted in several seemingly very painful places with all kinds of piercings. And he had a wonderful t-shirt on which said, a weekend wasted is not a wasted weekend. Now, who among us would disagree with that? Another time I was walking down a street in London, I saw a billboard with a big picture of Thierry Henry, the French soccer player. And I don't know what he was advertising, but the tagline for the billboard was an aphorism. And it said, I hate to lose, but I'm not afraid to fail. After a talk I gave not long ago, an elderly gentleman came up to me afterwards, and he was one of those elderly gentlemen who, I'm sure there's none of them here today, who literally jabs their index finger into your chest and says, my grandmother used to say this to me all the time, is it an aphorism? And I said, well, what is it? He said, if you keep your mind and your bowels open, you'll be all right. Another billboard I saw just recently, I don't know if Gordon Ramsay, he's a television chef, I don't know if he made it over here, but he was advertising Gordon's gin. See the connection? And he, again, the tagline was a great aphorism. If you cut too many corners, you lose your edge. Another woman sent me an email through my website, and she said, you know, I was having this email exchange with my boss, and he said something that I thought was so brilliant in this email, I just wanted to check with you if it was an aphorism or not, which is the kind of question I love to get. And so I told her it was an aphorism, and it's a very good one, and the line from her boss's email was, I thought it over till I overthought it. That's brilliant. Now, my current favorite aphorism comes from a yogurt advertisement on television, and it goes like this, lick the lid of life. Isn't that the most gorgeous thing you've ever heard? It's a wonderful variation on seize the day. So the point I want to make about that is that a lot of people say aphorisms are a very aristocratic art form because French noblemen are some of the greatest practitioners of the form. I think that's completely nonsense, to be honest with you. Aphorisms are the most democratic art form that we have because everybody knows aphorisms, everybody uses aphorisms. And at dinner parties, when people ask me what I do for a living, unfortunately, I have to say I write books about aphorisms. And they're fascinated. And their first question is, what's an aphorism? And as soon as I say what an aphorism is, they tell me what their grandmother used to say to them all the time. So there are many things I love about aphorisms. It's the wordplay, it's the intensity of the use of language, the compression of meaning, the sense of humor. But I think the greatest virtue of aphorisms for me is that they do not make you feel good about yourself. And I think not feeling good about yourself is a very important way to feel. Because aphorisms are sort of for use in emergencies. You know, when things are going well, nobody needs any words of wisdom. You know, if you just won the lottery, you know, money is the root of all evil is not something that you're really interested in hearing at that time. But if things are going bad, as they often do, and as they certainly will, that's when aphorisms can really come to your rescue. And that's when aphorisms, in fact, can change your life. And when I say aphorisms can change your life, I mean that quite literally, because aphorisms have changed my life in big ways and in small. And I want to just share quickly two examples of how that has happened to me. Now I'm going to answer your question. Aphorism. I honestly don't remember what the first aphorism I read in Reader's Digest was, but the second or the third was this: the difference between a rut and a grave is the depth. Now, I read that when I must sometime between 8 and 12 years old, and it has never, ever left my mind since. And it's not a very pleasant thing to have in your mind. And for a very miserable period of my life, when I was working very hard in a job that I had come to despise, that saying, the difference between a rut and a grave is the depth, was the first thing that popped into my mind when I woke up every morning. And that's not very pleasant either. And I didn't feel very good about myself. But waking up with that aphorism in my mind every morning, and this is another virtue of the aphorism, it made me want to do something. It made me want to get the hell out of that rut. And I did nothing dramatic to get out of that rut, but I did small things that did get me out of that rut. So, for example, walking to work, I would walk to the tube station to get the tube to work, and I live in London, that's why I'm using the word tube. Subtitle would say subway at this point. So it's a few blocks. I would cross the street and walk on the other side of the street. So I normally walked on the left side of the street. To get out of the rut, I walked on the right side of the street. Instead of getting off at the tube stop that was closest to my work, I would get off at one that was further away. So I had to walk a different route to work. Or I would not take the tube at all. I would take the bus to work. And then the bus shows you all kinds of aspects of a city that you would never see underground. So that little change in my routine opened up a different perspective for me in my mind. I still hated my job, so it didn't solve any of my problems. But what it did was open up a little crack of possibility. And this is the great virtue of aphorisms. Now, that's a small, relatively minor example of how aphorisms have changed my life. A much bigger example is that if it were not for an aphorism by W.H. Auden, I would not have met my wife. Now, when I was in college, can you wait 5 minutes? The question was, what was that aphorism? When I was in college, I was deep into my aphorism addiction. And I'm afraid to say that people had begun to notice. And part of the reason that they had begun to notice is because I was very much in their face telling them about it and putting on little happenings, sort of spontaneous little happenings that I would just spontaneously do because I thought it was very profound and interesting. One of these happenings was I carried a bunch of very large stones into the cafeteria and piled them into a heap, and I stood on that heap and spat a mouthful of little, smaller stones out onto the floor, and then I carried the stones back out again. Now, you laugh, but I was making a very profound statement about I'm not sure what. I realize now how obnoxious that was and annoying, but nevertheless, I did it. Another thing I did was roam through the cafeteria with a globe in my hand, and in that globe, I had put little slips of paper in which aphorisms were written. I was an aspiring aphorist at that time, I still am, and some of the aphorisms were my own, and some were by aphorists that I liked. And what I did was I roamed through the cafeteria at dinner time, and I walked from table to table, and coincidentally, I had cut a hole just like this one in the globe, and asked some people to reach in, take out a piece of paper with an aphorism on it, and the trick was I would not leave the table until they read the aphorism aloud. So I had a couple dozen aphorisms in the globe, and I went from table to table, and there was this one person who I had kind of spotted at college for a very long time, but had never actually met. And I thought it would be a good opportunity to have a little encounter with her, so I offered the globe to her, and she picked an aphorism out. And the aphorism was, by W.H. Auden, "Guessing is more fun than knowing." So, as I said, I had a couple dozen aphorisms in the globe, and I, you know, after that brief encounter, I went on to the next table and distributed the rest of the aphorisms. Now, at the college that I attended, we had little cubby holes where our post and mail and little notes and flyers, you know, would be inserted, and anyone could insert a note in there. And the next morning, I found a little piece of paper in my cubby hole, and I opened it, and it said, "Sometimes knowing is more fun than guessing." Now, I happen to remember very distinctly who picked the aphorism, "Guessing is more fun than knowing." So later that day, I spotted this person going down the stairs after a class, and I was at the top of the stairs, and I spotted her going down. I was going to my class, and I leaned over the railing, and I said, "You're right. Sometimes knowing is more fun than guessing." So that was that. The day progressed. I went to my classes. Everything was normal. I went to the cafeteria for dinner. I went somewhere, and later that night, I came back to my room, and standing outside my door was the woman who had picked the W.H. Auden aphorism. And she's sitting back there, and she's now my wife.